everyone, this is the Brexit Podcast and I'm your host Jennifer Han. Since the EU referendum, we've been hearing a lot of generalizations about voting patterns, like metropolitan areas voted in or minority ethnic groups voted in. Now, the BBC has released a report which undertakes a localized breakdown of these votes and which elaborates on and actually disproves some of those assumptions to give us a more detailed view of how and why people voted. So for today's episode, my co-host Tim Hemming and I chatted to George Greenwood, who's the Freedom of Information researcher for the BBC, and who worked on this report to walk us through the results. If you enjoy this show and you want to stay on top of all future Brexit news, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. Hi George, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
It is really early in the morning indeed, but we'll jump straight into the big questions anyway. Why was it so important to get such a minute breakdown of all the different voting patterns throughout the country?
Sure. Well, I think this project is quite important because it does give you a sense of how people voted at a lower level than is currently available. So, you know, London boroughs, Scottish areas, you know, towns, they're not what contiguous places. They come up with very different communities and different areas. You know, they're very varied in demographics. And actually seeing how that broke down to a lower level of granularity can actually help people understand, you know, how people voted, you know, what made people vote for Remain, what made people vote for Leave. And I think that's incredibly valuable, and we just haven't had that yet. From the totals from the counting areas.
Mm. So what was the process for that, putting it all together?
So in July, me and my boss Martin Rosenbaum decided to go ahead with this project. Basically, Martin had noticed that Birmingham had released their results by ward level, and basically he wondered if other places had done that as well. So we ended up sending sort of freedom of information requests to all local authorities that counted the referendum to try and get this information. Now, a slightly geeky note, returning officers aren't actually covered by freedom of information, which is just interesting in itself. Mm. But at the same time, we felt we'd just send out, you know, the email using various, you know, FOI emails, because usually it's much easier for councils to actually deal with these sort of requests in that way. Now, we got a few came back to us very quickly with ward level data, and some councils did it with it in other ways. So, for example, they counted it by constituency, by groups of polling districts, and some just did it in sort of big lumps of 1,000 votes. But it was very interesting to see that a few came back to us quickly and others didn't. It took several chases, several phone calls, called the press offices to actually get any information out of them, and some simply refused. Some, which, you know, they have a right to, but you know, some just said, no, we're not going to give you that.
Why do they have a right to refuse? This whole process was about giving the public a voice and hearing what everybody thinks. Mm. So how come they're not covered by freedom of information?
Well, I'm not sure about the justifications for legal reasons, but I think it will be something on the lines of affecting the ability to have an effective vote, something along those lines, I would imagine. I mean, the real issue is that the Electoral Commission set the base unit of this referendum as being counting areas, and that was local authorities, London boroughs, that sort of thing. And below that, they didn't really make any accommodation for more granular data being recorded. Indeed, their regulations only suggested that they mix certain types of ballot papers. And then it was up to the councils how they did it. Now, some councils, in London in particular, probably the highest rate of ward level recording, simply deferred to what they did for local elections and just recorded it, you know, in wards as the mini, as the counts, and then put it together into sort of the overall borough result. Other bigger areas did it by constituency, because, again, if you're in Wales or, you know, in other parts of the UK that are quite sparsely populated, doing it by ward is quite a undertaking, and it's far easier just to do it, you know, in bigger groups and bigger lumps. But the problem for us meant that we had to sort of sift through various different kinds of data. There was no real consistency about how councils did this. Some did it by constituency, some did it by county area, some by ward, which was the data we used, some by groups of polling districts, and then some even just sort of counted them all, verified with ballot boxes, and then put them into a big pile and gave them to counting tables in groups of 1,000, which was obviously useless for our purposes. So I think there is a question here about, you know, in the future whether council should be required to give, you know, a more granular understanding, a good granular results of their electoral counts. But I'm not, you know, as a result of the question, I think that the reason that they didn't do it was that the Electoral Commission didn't tell them to.
Yeah. Mm. They just weren't set up for it, really.
No, exactly. Yeah. So it was very varied in what we got back.
So what were the major findings? Could you run us through them?
I mean, please. So partially it confirmed what we'd already known from various polls and analysis of the electoral results we already had, and that was educational attainment by level of qualification was one of the biggest predictors of Remain or Leave votes. So the higher the level of qualification on average someone had, the more likely they were to remain. Then also age was very important, so the older someone was, the more likely they were to vote to leave. Perhaps the interesting thing about this result was that ethnicity was also a predictor, so minorities were in general more likely to vote to remain to leave. However, what the ward level result shows is it doesn't hold for the whole of the UK. So in parts of East London, in Ealing and Hounslow, for example, actually ethnic minorities were more likely to vote to leave than their majority white wards that were majority white next to them, which is quite an interesting difference. And I think also shows that, you know, ethnicity wasn't a one-way street in this process, and actually it was far more variegated than previous analyses have shown.
Is there any sort of hypotheses posed in regards to why this could have been?
At the moment, I think it's probably too early to say. Some parts of vote leave had sort of, you know, Muslims to leave, and I would be interested to know how effective those campaigns were in the areas we saw a very high leave vote. But beyond that, I'd only be guessing to try and suggest exactly why that was.
Do you know if there was one of those campaigns in Ealing and Hounslow?
I don't, unfortunately, no. Mm.
Do you know if there's going to be any digging into the reasons for this, or is this sort of, now that the data's out there, it's just sort of, that's the thing?
So the whole point of, so we released the data when we did the story, and this is to allow academics who have far more time to do this than journalists, so you can go away and compare this to other measures to use whatever data they have, their own polls, their own analyses, and that should allow for a much greater understanding over time of these factors. That's kind of part of our intention with releasing the data, was to allow this sort of, almost crowdsourcing of research into these figures and see what else we can learn from them.
Mm. So if we're looking at the big finding of education level being a determining factor for the voting result, there have been a lot of different explanations posed for why this is. Could you sort of run us through what kind of positions there are, both on the left and on the right, in regards to this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the sort of campaign from the Remain side would argue that it's people not necessarily knowing what is in their best interests. On the Leave side, there are arguments about sort of culture, differences in culture. You know, the idea that actually people from those working class and older and, you know, less educated qualifications want different things, and that's why they voted to leave. To give a complete explanation, this is going to take a lot more time and, you know, a lot of people going into it, but those are the sort of arguments you get, is it's whether people are sort of, what, you know, the whole argument that 350 million was sort of, you know, convinced people to vote for something that wasn't in their interest from the sort of Remain campaign, whereas the Leave campaigners would argue that actually it reflects sort of the, you know, people who didn't have a voice in the country, who did want the different things than people in government were able to actually express that view through the referendum.
Yeah, do you feel that when you release results like this, that it can have there's a risk that it can have even more of a polarising effect, because people then almost feel perhaps they're being preached to by the media or the establishment?
Hmm. Well, in terms of being preached to, I think having as much information as possible is always a good thing. But then
we don't want experts anymore, right?
Well, if you listen to a certain Mr. Gove, then that's quite correct. I think having as much information about this as possible is a good thing. Now, whether people, you know, feel this is divisive or not, that is really, you know, that's not for me to say. But ultimately, I think what it can do is show that rather than being in huge blocks like Scotland, London, the rest of the UK, and Northern Ireland, you can see that actually it's not quite that simple. You know, it's not as simple as Scotland versus the UK, Scotland and London versus the rest of England, for example. You know, Wales against Northern Ireland. You can actually see that within cities, within areas, there was a big areas of difference between how people voted. And I think that can only help people understand what actually happened.
Yeah, it's much more nuanced than perhaps we our simple brains would like to understand at times. Just in terms of the age thing, do you have a sense that if the voting age had been reduced to 16, that would have been enough to swing the balance in favour of Remain? Does the data show up that?
Well, our data doesn't really cover sort of 16 to 18 voting.
Yeah.
In general, I think if you look at the demographics of how 16 to 18 year olds voted for the EU, I think you would have found that a lot of them did vote to Remain. Whether that will be enough to change the result of the referendum, I don't have the figures to say. Others may have been involved in that. But certainly, in a lot of the sort of voting around the referendum, Leave campaigners do sort of note that that was one of the victories in the run-up to the referendum, was to ensure that 16 to 18-year-olds didn't vote. So it's a very interesting question about whether that would make a difference. But ultimately, it's one of a number of factors that that affected how the result happened.
Mm.
So there was an interesting dynamic going on that you found in cities like Bristol or Birmingham or Nottingham. Could you run us through what sort of happened there?
Sure. I mean, so in cities such as Oxford and Bristol, and actually the county of Cornwall as well, are good examples, where you see younger, more urban populations voting to Remain quite strongly, whereas more working class, older and less prosperous areas voting to Leave. So to take Oxford, Blackbird Leigh's estate is one of the more deprived areas of the city. Now, we didn't get ward-level data for Oxford. We did get groups of polling districts that were contiguous. And those polling districts showed that the area around Blackbird Leigh's actually did vote to Leave, obviously adjusting for postal votes. And whereas the centre of Oxford areas were voting 80% to Remain, Blackbird Leigh's and the areas around it voted very narrowly to Leave. That sort of shows that even within English cities and British cities, there was a big difference between how people voted in the same areas. The idea that, you know, you have a Remain town and a Leave town has shown just not to be the case in many areas in the UK. Same thing in Bristol. You see areas of South Bristol that are, you know, more deprived areas voting to Leave compared to the very much more prosperous student-y centre. And in Cornwall, the opposite effect you have is where the areas around Falmouth and Truro, in the constituency around those areas, you have a narrow Remain vote, whereas the rest of the county voted to Leave. And it seems likely that the large student population there probably had something to do with that. So it's the sense in which you have people, you know, metropolitans, both in the sort of in the regions and in regional cities in the centre, against people who live on the outskirts. It's a narrative that plays out both at the town level as well as across the UK in general.
Mm. So we had Graham Smith on from Cornwall Reports talking a Cornwall episode, and he talked a lot about the university town being the one area in Cornwall that voted to Remain, whereas see the county, as you just said, there was Leave as a whole. Is there anything other than how tricky it was to get this information that really surprised you from any of this?
Well, one of the interesting things was, of course, that areas of Scotland we've identified voted to Leave, and I think that's very interesting, actually, because the areas that voted to Leave, so we identified parts of Shetland, the Western Isles, and Aberdeenshire that voted to Leave. Were also the part, you know, were generally the parts that voted to Leave in 1975. So in Shetland and in the Western Isles were the only parts of the UK to vote against the 1975. Vote to Leave in the referendum, which I found very interesting.
Yeah,
but actually,
absolutely.
There must be some sort of carrier you know, carryover of views even after sort of 40, 50 years. Other than that, I mean, obviously, other than sort of having to harass people, it's, I mean, it's just how different, how people who live very close together often had very, very different views about the European referendum. You know, you see one ward, you know, voting very strongly to remain next to another ward that votes very strongly to leave, without necessarily any obvious reason why, you know, the two have a very different view. And we see that in some of the much more granular data we got by groups of polling districts. Martin writes about this in the piece in a bit more detail about, you know, areas that sort of had the sort of largest differential in Leave and Remain votes.
I found that probably the most interesting part of this, just because right after the referendum, everyone's like, metropolitan areas wanted to remain and everybody else wanted to leave, but clearly it wasn't that black and white. Clearly it wasn't as polarized. So I find it, I'm quite intrigued, why do you think it is that there are such distinct, I mean, obviously it's quite hard to pose a hypothesis at some at this point, but do you think there's still a sort of, I don't want to say a sort of segregation, but obviously similar groups of people are grouped together geographically apparently still?
Well, in terms, I mean, certainly you see this in terms of sort of more working class areas in the north of England, for example. They very, very predominantly voted to leave. I mean, I think there are divides in the UK. I think you can see that in terms of wealth, in terms of education. You just need to look at the census reports. And those did play into how people voted the referendum. Now, whether that leaves, you know, irreparable divides in the UK, that seems to be unlikely. But are there big differences in, you know, where we want to go as a country? I think the referendum showed that. And you know, the challenge for government really is going to be to bridge that gap.
So I guess from your point of view, Liberals calling for another referendum, that would be disastrous, wouldn't it? You'd have to go through this whole process again.
Well, I shall leave to Tim Farron whether he wants to continue that view. I think what the referendum shows is that the results that we've had, I don't think it shows whether there'd be a Leave or Remain vote again. I think that's really, really sort of depends on the data we've already seen, and that people generally did believe how they voted, both for Remain and for Leave. People, you haven't seen sort of lots of regrets as the term goes. Whether, you know, there should be a second referendum is a matter for the politicians rather than me, but you know, the data out there suggests that there probably wouldn't be a drastically different vote if we had it.
No, true. But then I guess nobody taking their lead from the politicians, no one likes to admit a mistake anyway.
Well, arguably so.
So I think there was a lot of talk right after the referendum about this having been sort of a class vote of sort of the metropolitan elites wanting to stay and the sort of working class deprived people in the countryside wanting to leave. Now, you found that class was a lot less of an indicator of voting pattern than age, than ethnicity, and then I forgot the last one. How did I manage that? Education. So why do you think there was that assumption that it was class, that sort of instinctual thing, like it must be class?
Well, I can't really, we didn't really look at class in terms of sort of ABC1, you know, categorised people in this report. We focused on education, on ethnicity and on age. So we'd have to go back and look at the class to see whether it's a factor according to our data. More generally, I think that again, what this data can show is sort of the narrow justifications of working class people against middle class people. You know, can show what is in that and what isn't in that. Now, in education, I think which obviously working class people tend to, you know, on average have less qualifications than middle class people. I think we've shown that people, you know, using education as a sort of proxy, you know, that is a reasonable thing to say, you know, and the data shows it. The higher the level of education, the lower the Leave vote. More generally, whether, you know, it's a class thing, I mean, there are arguments that I'm not sure we can really say that quite yet, other than using the proxy, so to speak.
I imagine this report's generated quite a lot of interest. Have you had any interest from abroad? A lot of countries at the moment are looking at Britain, so say, you know, where are they, what are they doing, where are they going? I imagine, you know, the likes of France and the Netherlands would be incredibly interested in this data.
Indeed. Well, I'm sure there will be academics from those countries looking at this and saying, well, what does this mean for the Freedom Party, and what does this mean for the chance of Le Pen being elected? I haven't had any emails from the from Mr. Hollande saying, please could you give us your analysis, but I can't speak for Martin. I think there would, I think there will be interest in this in more generally, because it will look at, you know, what factors were important in these sort of referendums around national issues that are quite divided. And I think, you know, another thing that might be quite interesting is in electoral campaigning. Now, we've seen in Richmond, obviously the Lib Dems the recent by-election the Lib Dems took it off Zach Goldsmith. You know, we've seen that, you know, arguably the referendum probably played a quite significant part in that decision. Now, whether this data could be used by political parties in their campaigning to sort of tailor their campaigns towards, you know, Leave or Remain voters is another interesting sort of possibility from the data. Whether this is possible, I don't know, but it's certainly a question to ask.
Yeah, we had Isabel Garin, who's a human rights journalist, actually on the Brexit podcast, and she was talking about high-tech firms becoming involved to help influence voting patterns. We looked at Cambridge Analytica, which is said to be influential in both Brexit and also the Trump election in the US. Yeah, a fascinating area, quite scary as well.
Well, the extent to which Facebook, you know, people spend time on Facebook and read the sort of promoted posts is certainly one of the interesting messages to come out of the referendum campaign. And, you know, Dominic Cummings has talked about how, you know, a lot of the money they spent on this was all on those sort of advertisements.
So finally, George, what's next for you? Are you finished now with looking at the research, or what are you moving on to?
Well, I think I'm moving back to more other freedom of information projects than the BBC. So I'm sort of someone who looks at these sort of longer term sort of data led stories. So looking a lot of, obviously the NHS crisis is very interesting, and we've been looking at a lot of health statistics that have been released, but we've got through FOI through that.
Not unlinked.
not unlinked at all. No, which is another interesting question, but. Especially if you tend to read the side of buses, perhaps the in terms of what comes next to this data, I think it is now for the academics to sort of take this and see what they can do with it. You know, they will have statistical analysis and analytical techniques far superior to myself and Martin, and I think it's up to them to see if there is anything more in this data for messages for political science to have a look at and to see what else we can get out of it.
We'll have to get one of them on the podcast then. That's the next one up. Okay, I think those are all the questions we had for you today. Thank you again so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.